Story of your life.
Story of my life. Many buttons to press. That's it. I can also cut anything out I want, so that's great.
Oh, amazing, amazing.
Yeah, post cut. Good. So, Victor, welcome to the podcast, man.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Sure. So, what do you got over there? I guess you have some cards.
Why? Oh, yes. I'm super excited about this. It's my brand new deck of cards. It's not out yet. Well, I don't know. Maybe by the time that this is out, they might be out as well. But it's the Pinya deck.
Sweet. When are they?
The Arco Faces.
And what kind of stock is it? Like what?
It's the premium bicycle crushed stock.
Mm-hmm.
And we printed so many because we really wanted like the best quality. And we couldn't print less than 2,500 if we wanted this paper. But since I live in Mallorca and it's very humid, I need the paper to be very, very, very good. So my standard was like, if it's not good, I'm not doing it. And then we made it.
So they're printed by Cartamundi then, or?
No. It's USPCC.
Okay. So these were shipped from the States also then?
Yes. Yeah. Well, this and this. And
how many more?
Yeah, I've got plenty because I need plenty. Right? But I'm super happy. Actually, there's something that people don't know, but these cards are marked as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's all I can say now because I don't know how much I can say, really.
But, don't worry. You'll just say it later, more later, you know.
Amazing.
What gave you, like, the idea to make your own deck?
Well, I didn't really think about it or anything. I just, I was working with Andre Shinichka, the guy that does the butterfly cards. And I consulted for his show and the online show and then for some of the Fula's act that he did. And he was super happy. And he said, well, want to collaborate and do a deck together? And I was like, what? You know, you always think of having your own deck, which is like a dream. It's like, ah, it'll eventually happen or not. But then it ended up happening. We worked for a whole year to put this out with the designer and the marks and everything. And we're super happy. So it's a collaboration between, well, it's produced by Butterfly Playing Cards and by me.
It's also just one of those really cool things to have, right? Like,
oh my God. And now I don't have to worry. You know, I've got my own deck. I don't have to buy any decks. And I don't have to worry about either because they're going to be cut well or if the paper's going to be good or I've got my own deck. I could perform with it. And then if friends want it, I can give them deck as well. It's just very nice. By the way, I'll give you a deck in Vienna.
Ooh, looking forward 100%. To that. Sweet. Yeah. No, but like, I think that's like it's also even for your marketability in some way, like it's kind of cool, you know, because I assume your business card also uses the pineapple or no?
Yeah. 100%. As soon as I say to people or to lay audiences that I've got my own deck with my own brand and everything, they were like, wow, you must be super amazing and super important. They're like, I'm not really. But the feeler they get is like, oh, wow, this magician is very good for a brand to collaborate with him and create his own deck and everything. And he makes it super good. Very easy as well for my business.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the best. But do you then also get like, of course, we always say that it's better to perform magic with stuff from other people. Like, you know, their cards or things they could also get in some way.
Yeah. I don't know. Most of the time, always, you know, I've been performing, I don't know, for 17 years. And they always think, oh, well, the cards might be tricked and somehow. But every time you hear something like this, I try to do an effect that cancels that idea or that thought. Right? Oh, yeah, but maybe if I do this, take a card, don't look at it, blah, 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 put it, you shuffle. I'm like, okay, no, but maybe not. But it depends on the setting, on the atmosphere, on how playful you are in that moment. You know, because I'm very joyful and playful, like to be with them. But if they always your own deck, or maybe it's strict, or maybe you like had it as like, no, it's just cardboard. It's very nice cardboard, by the way, but it's just paper, you know. And if you change the tricks or the things depending on how they go, it all be good. Yeah, some minor detail that sometimes happen. But...
What would you do? You have an example of something you would use to cancel that out?
The marking system, for example?
Yeah, or for example, that they're trick cards or that there's something special about them.
As soon as they touch the cards, they cancel 99% of their methods. As soon as they hand them the deck and ask them to shuffle, take a card, look at it, put it back, and shuffle again, because I could see the mark from far. I could see the mark from here. You know, so it's like, okay, take a card, look at it. Do you like it? Yeah, show it to everyone. Put it back, shuffle again. You got it? And I'm just like this, glimpsing a little bit. Like, okay. And then I guess the card, and then I find it. Just by doing this, 99% of the methods are canceled. Because they cannot like understand how I could see if there was a mark like from far.
Yeah.
So on and so forth.
So you would also start with just shuffle the cards.
Yeah. As soon as they say something, okay, but give it a shuffle and take a card out. And then from that point, depends on what tricks I did before, I just jam it out a little bit, depending on what tricks I want to do. And yeah, I do a lot of, that's my dog jumping in the pool. I don't know, you saw the splash.
Oh, yeah.
I got like a tree in my head of the tricks. I've got, for example, all the tricks that start with a card picked, or four cards picked, or a number. And then from there, I got different ways I can go. And depending on what I want them to feel or experience, or is more a surprise or more visual or more conceptual, or if it involves two people or one person, I go from there, you know?
But this is mostly talking about walk around, right?
Yeah, exactly. Walk around and table hopping and these kind of things. Yeah.
But that's interesting, because like I've heard many ideas for table hopping and walk around, and like, I mean, what you're doing, I'm playing with that right now as well. But I've heard many ideas where people, they go like, okay, so you should just have sets of three or four, you know, and have solid sets. So like when you start with this, you're going to do this and then end with this. And I felt a bit like always that for a show, that's a good structure if you're doing like solid show. But if you're doing walk around, not so much. Like maybe you want to have like, say, these are opener pieces, these would be middle pieces, and these would be closers.
Yeah, that might work. In my case, I have like five different openers, 5, 6, 4, I don't know, depending on the setting and the people. And from there, I've got different paths that I can follow.
Yes.
I don't have like middle tricks, ending tricks, and I've got paths. And they all lead to middle tricks or ending tricks or so on and so forth. But not because of that, they belong in that place. You know, maybe if I go through this path, this ambitious car routine is the second trick. If I go through another path, is the ending trick.
So you know? how do you create a path?
Oh, it starts with what you need. A car selected, deck shuffled, one spectator, for example. That's a path. Or you want to involve three spectators, a joker, because you want to start with a wild card. And then you got three cards, and then a spectator can choose the fourth one, and that fourth one is a nine, and then the other three cards transform into nines. And then I go with a Jacob's Dailies trick. And then, you know, if I start with three selections, then I can move forward from there. And then it's just a matter of what do I have and what I can do with it. And then just move forward and try to create an in crescendo. And
So is that then sort of like more looking like how does things relate to each other?
Exactly. Sometimes it relates, like it depends so much on the element, on the card, on how many cards. And most of the times also depend on the conversation I'm having with them. Because sometimes like, oh, but mind reading, and then I'm just going to something a bit more hands off. And someone's like, oh, but I do something visual. They react very well to the visual. I'm going to go to that area a little bit more. Done some quick changes, and then some. And it depends. It depends, because also cultures see magic in a different way. It's not the same thing doing magic to an Italian, to a Russian, or to a person from the States. You know, it's because culturally they see magic in a different way, and they react to it in a different way. Only the differences are minimum sometimes, and sometimes are massive. But also that plays very well.
I guess you also encounter that a lot, right? Because you perform a lot in clubs and stuff, like in Mallorca.
Yes, in private clubs with private members, you can only access if you're a member, or you've been invited by a member, like the Magic Castle. Right? Yeah. But these people, most of the times, are foreigners. They spend like 2 months in Mallorca, have a nice place to rest and relax, and bring their friends. And you find people, I don't know, from all over the world.
Sweet. But I'm still interested in like the path. So like to understand it a bit better, like is it like you're trying to connect them thematically or based on the conversation you're having? Or
I don't know. Maybe it's because I've done so many. I've been doing table hopping professionally for 10 years,
Yeah.
right? I've done so many gigs, and I've been trying to follow in this thinking process for the past two, because I've just started doing something different. And I don't know, you can also have different presentations for the same effect,
Of course, yeah.
right? And depends on the conversation. I think if I start with an ambitious coroutine, for example, then I can go into, I don't know, an everywhere nowhere card, because that's an ambitious coroutine, let's say, right? You can follow that pattern.
Yeah,
But
right.
then they oh, but this is all method and trick, and it's like, no, but magic is psychology. Magic is not method, it's psychology. It's 80% psychology. Like, what do you mean? And then I just can go into a card to number instead of going to another effect, because a card to number disengages technique. You just name a number and just gonna count. Yeah, you think this? No, this is all psychology. Look, you name the number that I want you to name. So
So in that way, it's also like a bit like the conversation is being stirred into a certain direction, right? Like it gives a bit the feeling
exactly.
of that they're saying, "Oh yeah, but do that," or "What do you mean with this?" It's like they're asking you, "Can you do this? Can you do that?" Or like the ham sandwich theory in some sense.
Yeah, most of the times, because it's like an informal setting. They want to know stuff. Oh, magician. Most people never met a magician. And they want to know, so how do you do this? And what about this? And yesterday I had a conversation with two girls from London, and they were genuinely impacted by the fact that I could be doing magic for hours and hours and hours. And I was like, how do you remember all the trades? It's like, you don't remember all the trades. It's just like, you know, so many tools and things, and you can just like use them as you want, right? And people are normally super fascinated about these kind of things. And they ask questions, and they think, and they put challenges. And most of the time, those challenges are not like, oh, to see the method. Because if they challenge you and you make it even harder, it's more impressive for them. You know, it's just a matter of intuition and genuinely listening to them, and use that to make that moment in make that moment remarkable in a way that moment it only existed in that very same moment. Because I'm not doing this trick for everyone. I'm doing this trick for you because the conversation led us towards that point, or you wanted to see something like this. So it is special, you know, so
Yeah, it's like that feeling of that what they just saw, it's only gonna happen once ever, and it's in that moment. It's not like someone can come to your show and experience that.
exactly. The other day, I had a gig, and one guy, oh, but how do you come up with all these tricks? Like, I don't know. I just play and think, and I try to have an idea, a new idea. It can be very small every day. And I had an idea this morning. You want me to show you something? I don't know how it's gonna go because it just happened this morning. I haven't tried it. And I do the in Spanish, it's called the gambler versus the magician. You find the sevens, and they all transform into the kings because of the card. And I do a variation on Agave's trick, right? But because I'm saying that, I just had an idea, and that presentation of the effect came out of his question. It feels so genuine. It's like, okay, we'll see. Like, I don't know how this is gonna go, but and you're so nice that if I ruined it, you'll be happy and just gonna clap anyway, right? So you mind if I try it out? It's like, yeah, of course, 100%. Because that presentation was introduced by them, it feels so genuine and so powerful as well. But because when it fails and then it just magic happens, it feels so in the moment. It's wow, you know?
It's like, but how do you find that balance also in the sense that like I guess when someone does magic or when someone does something for you, we also want them to be skillful on something. Like we want to hire someone for things, I would say, that you know can do that, right? So where do you find that balance? Because in some sense that could also come across as a bit like, oh, I'm not rehearsed, I'm not doing.
Oh, yeah, no, but before that's a very specific case, right? But in that very same case, I've been doing magic for them for a little bit, you know, so they know I've done my job and I'm very good, and so they allow it in a way, right? It's like I'm going to go off script
Yeah, it's like an
because you're
exception
so
that you're
nice.
making for them.
Exactly. Exactly. But also, and I just touched a topic that I think it's very important, is the allowance, you know, because all these impromptu settings with table hopping or cocktail magic, you have to win the right for their attention. It's not like I'm coming here, I'm going to perform. No. You have to earn the right of being able for them to just pay attention to you, not perform, just listen to you know? And that most of the times people say, well, I use a fire wallet. It's like, oh, is this your wallet? Boom, and it fires at the like, okay, that's just getting the attention, but you haven't earned the right of getting that attention. You know, and most of the times, once that is sorted out with the first 30 seconds, it can be with a magic trick, but I never do a magic trick in the first 30 seconds or 1 minute. I always try to establish a connection without the magic factor.
So
Because
do you have any tips on that, like for people that want to,
100% walk into a table or into a group with a massive smile and say, hi, how's everyone doing? Good? You're good? Yeah. And most of the time people were like, what? And the line that I use is, oh, you look a bit worried. Are you okay? And most of the time you're like, yeah. And I say, well, I'm Spanish, but I'm nice, I have to say, so you don't have to worry. Because most of the time the people that see my magic are not Spanish. I just like, it doesn't make much sense, but for them it's like, oh, it's Spanish, he wants to trick me, he wants to, I don't know, swindle me or something, you know? So that line, it's super soft, super easy, but it gets a soft laugh. And that's an instant connection. Like, yeah, you don't have to worry, I'm good, I'm good. You know, so that's one I use quite a lot. Most of the times, another line. Hello, how's everything? Oh, I'm very good. What about you? And I just like, wow. And people are like, what's the matter? It's like, well, I'm Spanish. I'm not used to people being nice to me. So it brings again something about me and something about them. It's creating an instant connection. Oh, you care about me. Oh, that's super nice. Thank you very much. I just say hello. Like, hi, how's you doing? It's like, oh wow, I love that enthusiasm. What's your name? You know, bring something important and valuable. When you say something, the first things you say should be something that like they like to hear, or it's very nice, or it's very valuable in a way that's like, oh, hello, I'm a magician, I'm working here. Like that's what you say all the time. That's robotic. Make it important, make it impromptu in a way that you're in present, you're in the moment. That's the most important part, because if you're with them, the connection is going to be created right away.
Yeah, like the only time that I would like to use that line, sort of like I'm a magician, I'm working here, is if it's a small company and their CEO like hired me, you know, and it's like a party. I go up to the people and I go like, or if it's a wedding, for example, like that's a better example, I think. It's like a wedding, and I go up to the people and I'm talking to, just first of all talking to them, and I just ask them like, how do you know the newlyweds? You know, and then when I thought, well, they go, oh, how do you know them? I'm like, well, actually, I don't know them that well, but for their special day, they wanted to show you something amazing, and that's why they hired me. And then you do some magic for them.
Nice. Nice. That's a good way of doing it. Yeah. It's all a matter of knowing oneself, you know? I know my flaws and I know how I communicate, how I behave, and I use that into my advantage, you know? It's like sometimes they say, oh, is the car coming out of my ear? I say, no, probably from mine, because I've got massive ears, you know? It's like I'm not ashamed of my flaws. They made me who I am, you know? And so using them to create a connection, to be present, and that's the most important part, because most of the times, not in a theater, not in a show, but when you can this kind of environments and settings, they want to have fun, they want to enjoy themselves. It doesn't matter if it's magic, if it's music, if it's the food, if it's the view in front of the sea, it's a mix of everything. But most of the times I do magic and I end up talking with them, just having a conversation, a lovely conversation. And then magic just isn't in a second, because we're laughing, having fun, and magic was like just a pretext to create that moment, you know?
That's it.
So it could be magic, it could be just is entertaining them, you know? In this case, it's not magic because it's art and it's theater and it's a show. It's also all those things, but those are secondary in this very same moment.
Are you never afraid in those moments that your employer thinks you're not working?
No.
No, that's
No,
okay.
because they have me around the tables or around their guests to make sure that I'm giving an impact to them. You know, that making sure everyone's happy, having fun, And I might have the deck away and nothing on my hands, but if they're laughing with me, they're comfortable with me, he's gonna be happy. You
But
know?
that's it, and that's also like the way that I approach magic, because very often when I go to walk-around gigs, I end up talking with people as well, maybe even for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And but I know people that not let go, like, oh no, you need to do two tricks and then next table, then next. It's very, very robotic, you know.
Yeah.
But I like the way, like, I see it a bit different now that you said this. Like, the context shifts a bit from the sense of I'm there to do magic. It shifts like you're there to give them a good time, to make it
Exactly.
memorable.
With magic. And
Yes.
that's super important because I'm a magician. I'm not a comedian. I'm not, it has to be with magic. But imagine I have to, I don't know, 10 tables in an hour. Okay. I don't have much time. And I know that. Imagine a good conversation just starts like, oh my God, I would love to stay with you here talking about this, but I have to show magic to somebody else. Would you mind me coming back later on? Or you like you to come back later on? And most of the time, like, yeah, please show us another trick as well, and blah, 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 blah. So there are ways of, you know, still
Yes.
being there and being nice. Like, I forgot that I have to do my work, but thank you very much for this conversation. I loved it. I'll be back if I have got time. Thank you. Thank you. Bye. You know, so.
Which in some sense is even better for networking as well, right? Because then when you come back, you're off the job.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yesterday with these two girls from London, like, I started a conversation. I ended my shift, right? I ended the time that I have to be there doing magic, but I just still been talking to them because I had my dinner. My dinner was being made. I just had to wait for it, you know? Like, and one point, one of them said, oh, but we're holding you up here, so you should be working. And I said, no, I finished my shift 10 minutes ago. I'm just waiting for my food. They're like, what do you mean you feel? Yeah, I was like, I'm having a good conversation with you. I'm just, what, would it want me to be there sitting alone, just like going like this? No, I'd rather have a lovely conversation with you while just waiting for my food. And they were like, wow, have a seat. And they're like, I don't know, just use that time for something, you know, you're creating a connection. Just,
Which is way more meaningful than just sitting in a corner.
I'm sure that they're going to remember me so much more because of that very same thing that I said. I'm having a great time with you here. I hope that you have it too, because if not, I'll be a bit dumb. But I'm having a great time and I don't mind staying with you instead of just going home. You know, it's like, oh, well, you just finished your shift. You want to spend time with us? That's amazing. You know, it doesn't, now they don't really care about what effect I created. They're going to remember me and my magic, but because of how everything went, more than how much they freaked out.
Yeah, but in the end, that's also what it's about, right? Like, it's about the way that you do it and you connect it to the people.
100%.
I would say, especially for
100%.
walk around, like stage magic or close-up show is a bit different, in my opinion. Because you can craft a bit more of an experience in the storyline, and that changes the game a bit.
100%. Yeah, I used to perform in Il Teatro Encantado in Madrid, which is Woody Aragon's theater. Well, Woody and two other magicians from
Yeah,
Madrid.
I went there to
And
see the show of Paco and Giancarlo.
oh, that's an amazing show. Tanto?
The one that Gea produced.
Yeah, exactly. It's an amazing show. But then you got people are there to see you, right? So most of half of the show, or most of half of what you have to do, be able to get their attention, it's already done without you even coming out of the curtain, you know. But in these impromptu settings, poof, you have to work very hard for it because they're having a great time. They didn't think they will be paying attention to you. Maybe they don't want to, right? And most of the times, well, not most of the times, but maybe one every 15, 20 tables, I just approach the table and they have a very serious conversation like, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Have a great time. If you want to see magic later on, please let me know. I'll be around. Or maybe you look at me and they go like this. Like, no, I'm just coming here to make sure everything's good. Yeah? Good. I'm just giving magic to everyone because the restaurant wants me to do it. But that's when people are really, really like this. You know, but most of the times they give you a little bit of permission to be like, okay, let me see if this is worth my time.
Yeah, but that's also interesting that you say that, because like very often I also notice like those important conversations you cannot really tell from a distance. But there,
Exactly.
once you're there, you go like, oh shit.
And most of the times, I go around the tables and I look at one and I just go straight to it. Because if I go run and then I stop in one, they don't expect me to be there, you know? But if, for example, I just walk towards your table, you notice me coming. So they're going to stop talking about something important, or they're just going to look at me, and then it gives me time to connect before I reach the table. But I'm just walking around, and then, oh, hello. You're like,
yeah, exactly.
And hello. So also give them time to acknowledge that you're coming. Because it get them psychologically ready, or they think about something, they have questions, and then you can just start from there.
But that's also like connecting to the book you have there, like Notes from a Fellow Traveler. I think one of the first Darren Brown books that I read was Absolute Magic.
Oh, wow. What a book.
And like it took very long for me to read it. Like I read it like 2 years ago. But what I found interesting about that book is I already had the theory for a while that you shouldn't start with magic. Because I don't know. Like I always heard this advice of you go up to a table and establish yourself with like a fire wallet or put a coin from someone's ear or produce a card or whatever. And when I tried that, I always sort of had this feeling of people just going a bit like, you know, like what are you doing?
Yeah.
And not in a nice way. Like it was a bit of a cheesy party trick that you were doing. So I felt like you are behind by one.
Yeah.
Whereas if you just go to a table, you talk a bit, and then I would go into a magic trick, I would just introduce it or just be simple. Like if it was a big event, I'd just go up to a table and introduce myself. Like, how are you all doing? And then I'd be like, look, the management, they hired me to show you guys something amazing. And they wanted me to show you some magic. Would you be up for that? And I usually go, oh yeah, let's see, you know, and then go into it.
Yeah.
But that really clicked when I read the book, because he is also talking about the importance that you give to it. Because like, if you're going to be really like fascinated by your hand and something important that it does, and then it produces a coin, then that's much stronger than, oh, look behind your ear. You know, it's because you can start very slowly. Like you don't have to do a magic trick within the first 20 seconds that they say, as long as you're focusing on it and your body projects like, oh, this is important what I'm doing. Then they're also going to be like, oh, why is he paying so much attention to that small thing? What's going to happen? You know, like it creates suspense in some way.
100%. Is the importance you give is the importance they're gonna give it to it as well. Mm. And most of the times I frame it as a gift from the house.
Yeah.
You know, there's a gift on the house. You don't have to worry about anything. Just enjoying yourself with the food, the view, and the experience.
Mm.
And once they've given me permission, I don't ask, do you want to see a magic trick or you want to see something? I say, oh, sir, what's your name? Paul. Okay, Paul. Have you got a favorite card in mind? Most people don't do, but if you don't do, that's fine. I'm just magicians do that. Mm. But name one out loud. It could be really any. And most of the time they say, I have to say it out loud. And I say, yeah, sharing is indeed caring.
Mm.
You know, my verbal cues and all the things that I say, it goes to the same thing all the time. Sharing is caring, right? We're sharing this experience, we're sharing this moment because we care about magic, about the moment, about the people around us. And if they see that you care, they'd be, okay, this guy is fun, this guy is excited, let's give it a try.
But that's also like a good point, because especially if you get hired by a restaurant or by a club, like they also hire you not just to show magic, but they hire you to give the guest a good experience. But especially because the club next door is not doing that. So
exactly.
There needs to be a reason for them to come back. Like you're helping out the house.
100%.
Which is also right that you say. Like it's a gift from the house to you. You know?
Exactly. The restaurant wants to give you these for free.
Mm.
And wow, it's not like it's not trivial. You know, it's a full show from a person just been performing around the world.
Mm.
Just at your table only for you.
Yes. Wow. And that's so much better than just someone going around doing magic.
Yeah, 100%. 100%, because they don't know anything, you know. Mm. Frame it in a way that it's meaningful, create a connection and work from there. Because magic is not important. It's important for you, but not for them, maybe. You just want to see something cool and that's it. You know, but we need to understand the context. Context is everything. Context is everything.
I wonder though, because like you said you've been doing magic professionally for 10 years, right?
Yeah.
And like you're one of the few people that I know that's like super excited about magic still. And every time that you see something, you go like, oh my god, what the fuck's this? What's that? You know? I wonder like how, because I've also met so many professionals, especially when I started, and they've gone like, yeah, I haven't learned anything new in the past 10 years. I've just been doing the same things. And I thought already when I started, like, I never want to become that. So
yeah.
How do you keep that passion going?
Oh, well, it might, it's been because of three people. Juan Tamares, Gabby Paredes, and a good friend of mine also called Diane Oatley.
Okay.
Diane Oatley told me the most amazing, well, I'm going to go from Juan first. Okay. Juan talks about the present, right? When you give a present to someone, you don't give it to them and then you leave before they open, right? You want to see their reaction to the present, right?
Yeah.
So that's important. That's what you're giving them, that feeling. You want to see it, you know, because you don't leave out of the method of what you do. That can happen as well, but also of what you're giving them. You learn. You spend your whole life for them to be feeling that in that moment. Wow, that's precious, right? So Gabby is putting the attention out of the magician and more the experience. You know, we're here to share this moment. It's all about sharing this very same thing, you know? And Diane Oatley was a public speaker. I'm in a public speaking club here in Mallorca. It's called Toastmasters. And Diane was one of the founders, right? And when I came in, he just helped me with everything. It was like, Victor, how are you doing? You good with the speech? You want to evaluate this? And one day I saw a speech for the fifth time, the same speech for the fifth time. And she was, I don't know, 80-something years old. My God. And see that woman, 80-something years old, founded the club 25 years ago. So been doing public speaking for 25 years, every week, meetings and conventions and stuff. And I saw that speech for the fifth time. Maybe she's given that speech, I don't know, 50 times? I have no idea. And I said, Diane, how do you do it? How do you just like, how do you do it for the first time? No, how do you do it for the 50th time, like it's the first time? And she just told me one thing. I've got goosebumps right away because sadly Diane is not with us anymore. But she said, they haven't seen it yet. I don't do this for me. It just, well, maybe I want to do this tree because I like it and I like the method and I enjoy performing it. But I'm not doing this for me. I'm doing it for them.
That's it, yeah.
And that's the sentence that summarizes everything, you know? It's not the magic of the ego, at least not for me. It doesn't really work at all. Because I used the magic of the ego at the beginning when I was a kid and I wanted to be important and be the cool kid and get friends and, you know, all these things that you do because you're stupid. But at the end, you eventually find out that, yeah, if you just do magic because of magic and because you want to look cool, people are not going to connect with you, you know? It's not going to be meaningful for them. It's just going to, hey! It could be impressive, it could be surprising, it could be, but by the end of the day, they're not going to remember you because you didn't create a connection with them. Because everything you did, it was because of your big, massive ding-dong.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's like, I like it. Like recently I was talking with Mike about this as well, you know, like Michael Vincent. And he was like, oh, no, there's place for ego and magic. I was like, oh, what do you mean? Like, what the fuck? And he said very, like, I still live by these words now. He said, look, when I practice, that's for me.
Exactly.
But when I'm performing, that's for the audience.
100%. 100%. Well, you also practice for the audience as well.
Definitely. But it also means, like for example, you can just practice some stupid move you're never going to use, but it's super cool because you're like, oh, but this card can move like this and that's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But you would never use it in performance.
But then you show it to magicians and stuff, and that's
that's
100%. There's room for that. But sorry, I'm just gonna. I just noticed that this is falling, and I'm glad I caught it before it fell. absolutely. There's room for magic. Diego has to be there. You know, it's always. But we're not doing that because of that. You know, we into magic because we love it. Well, many different reasons, right? In my case, I find it fascinating. You know that I can create these experiences out of fucking cardboard, painted cardboard. There's so many things that you could do, make people feel, you know, and it's wonderful. I like magic because of that. It also allows me to be myself, truly myself. Yeah. Because when I'm not performing and with magic, well, I'm autistic and like the social environment sometimes are quite tough and hard for me. So that's why I started with magic with the ego and everything, because like that gave me like a shield, you know, in front of a, but now there's no shield, it's just like open arms, you know. It's just magic allowed me to see through all those important things.
It's like what's the thing from the book, like magic gives you what it requires of you.
Yeah, that reminds me of the Mike Jagger quote. You cannot always get what you want, but you try hard enough, you get what you need.
That's it. Yeah, definitely.
And most of the times we don't know what we need.
Yeah, but that's it. But it's also scary sometimes to go there, you know?
Yeah, yeah, because it's the unknown, right? It's the unknown.
But also in that sense, like, I think it's an interesting balance that you have with magic, because in the beginning when you start, there's a lot of ego.
Yeah.
And then at one point you start looking only at the audience reaction and sort of you start to fade away, because at least that's what I had, like, oh, this gets a good reaction, this is not okay, we're gonna go do this. But then at one point you also need to have a certain philosophy about magic, I feel, if you go further, because what makes me different from that performer? You know, like, I don't think you should perform every effect possible. Like, there's some effects that I love and I love to see my friends do those things. But until I find a presentation or a way to do it that makes it me, I wouldn't do it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just true. Being truly oneself, you know? You can copy all the magicians, you can copy all the tricks, but it's going to feel, it's going to sound that it's not going to be 100% you being present with them.
And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. I mean, like, that's a great that's a great way to learn, you know?
100%. We learn by copying others, you know? We see our ma grab the fork and we do it like they do it. Like, we behave and we communicate like our parents or like a friend, because we learn by copying each other. That's why we learn so quickly as kids, because we just copy. You know, but from that, we need to understand that you copy to understand and learn the techniques and the tools, but those then are techniques and tools that you use.
Exactly.
You know? But well, it depends. And you also mentioned that you showed these magicians and ego and the Michael Vincent thing. And I just remember something because I like cardistry.
Yeah,
but I'm super bad at cardistry. I just really like
yeah, me too.
I'm like I know how to do. I'm terrible, you know. But when I'm with magicians and old cardistry, like Franco Pascali is a good friend, I was like to ask them, show me something, right? And I found it super interesting, because for cadres, if one doesn't know the move, I don't know that move. Oh, that's cool. How you do it? They all know their level. They all know I'm in this position, not in this position. And I'm not comparing myself to other people. I know that I'm here and I want to keep learning. You know, everyone is super aware of their level.
Yeah.
But in magic, I feel like everyone is trying to hide their level, you know? Have you read this book? Yeah, yeah, of course, yeah. The thing with the sure, the Marlowe thing, 100%. Oh, that's Ty Vernon, right?
Oh yeah, just I mean, just if you don't know what it is, just say it's Marlowe. You'll probably be right.
Yeah, but most of the times people want to look like they know a lot. Like, it doesn't matter if you know one technique or 1,000. Just understand the position you are today and where you want to be tomorrow. You don't have to compare yourself to other people. And I learned that from the cardist world, you know, because they don't care about all those things.
But I would say you would probably learn even more if you do that. Like,
100%.
I actually enjoyed the conventions the most, where I'm like the stupidest in the room or the worst at the table.
100%.
Which is also why the close-up symposium scares the fuck out of me, because I'm going there. I'm going to do a competition act. I don't do competitions, by the way. And then I'm going to be there with like half of the people that have won FISM, you know?
That's not true, my God. Okay, thank you for that. I got the same feeling now. Cheers.
But at the same time, that's also great and exciting, because it's just, okay, just shut the fuck up and just listen to all the people around you.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how Danny Daorty, well, I was at his house once, and he said, well, I don't care if you're here and you know, I don't know, double undercut and a glide, you know? Do you love magic? I do too. Let's share, you know? And that's also, something that I learned from Gabby, sharing is caring, right? And since we care about magic, we share magic, period. Mm. You know, it's not a battle of ego that I know more and I fooled you and like, and if I fool you out of school, I didn't know that. Can I learn it? Oh, yes, no. And then that's it, you know? But
it's also like this this guy I'm sort of mentoring. Like a few days ago, he sent me this text message. He was like, oh, yeah, I learned something that will probably fool you. And my reaction was, okay, so is that the goal of magic?
Yeah, it is. Well, but I understand the people that come to magic for first. They're like, oh, if I fool a magician, I'm super good.
Of course. And that's right? Also like the reason why in the beginning you buy things, at least for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. But then you realize that fooling a magician doesn't make you better or worse. It just makes you know 1% of one thing. Mm. But they might know 90% of another thing. You know, it's like going on Pula, Spell and Teller. Spell and Teller, super knowledgeable. When it comes to card magic, their knowledge is it's not minimum, but they don't know as much as, I don't know. I don't want to say names, but they don't know a lot about card magic, right? So you fool them with a card trick, or you fool Spell and Teller. Well, it doesn't mean that you're better than them, or you're just like a better magician. No. It's like, even if you know something that they don't. But that's pretty much it, you know?
But even like fooling magicians is also like you sort of know what they're looking for and how they think, because we have a different way of thinking than lay people.
Yeah.
So it's more like you know how someone thinks about the inner life of an effect.
And the outer life.
And you use that against them.
100%. Well, for me, when I work for magicians, the external life and the internal life are both external life. You know, maybe there's another layer somewhere. I don't know.
It's like this story I heard, like of Kostia Kimlet, like told us in a lecture. Also, he was when he would be working for magicians and he would be doing stuff with the call. He would like on purpose call some random cards poorly. Like he would like just call all the aces, but poorly call all the kings. You know, and they thought he was gonna do something with the kings, and just game over there.
That's good. I remember Woody Aragon, they showed me a routine that he told me he did in FISM. I think he was in Busan. I don't know. He does the magician against the gambler, right? With the seven that they transform into kings or whatever it is. It was like, okay. So this is the two, right? And then I'm going to put it here. Yeah, the two, right? And they just like showing the two again. And the magician was like... He did a double lift, right? And then he's like, it's the same card. And then they end up transforming anyways, right?
Yeah, man.
But the fact they were like this and did a double, and they're just like, oh, the two, yeah, I'm going to leave it here. Like, okay. I know the trick, but how is going to switch them and then transform anyways? It's like, wow.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the same thing, you know? You know what knowledge they have, and you try to use it against them. It's like when we're performing for lay audiences, right? They know less. But still, you play with the knowledge that they have. You know, they might know what a key card is. They might know that this, like, you know that for them, cutting the deck, it means shuffling. If I do this,
they do.
It means shuffling, you know? So
that's using their knowledge again. That's interesting, yeah, because like I never really believed that until like sometimes people ask me, can you teach me a trick? And I teach them like a basic key card principle, right? Because I still think if you use key card properly, like it's going to fool people anyway. But then I always let them cut the cards, and then they go, yeah, but you, how? Because you're cutting, like you're changing, like you're shuffling the deck. And I go, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's not happening.
But people need to, like, it takes quite some knowledge to realize that a deck is cyclical. And if you're cutting, you're just going to another point in the cycle rather than changing the cycle.
It's knowledge that they don't have. It's just a magician knows a little bit more than a lay person, but
like I think a magician notices, and someone that plays a lot of cards would notice as well. But
you have to think about it because this is like, you go like this, you're like, okay, now the bottom card is in contact with the top one. If I do it again, it's going to happen the same thing, so I'm not changing the order.
Yeah, but for some reason, when you do it more often, it becomes more and more.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
I was also like, I also had like a question for you specifically, which I was thinking about. It's about your suit apparition.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was thinking today again, like about like the Ascanio book, and like he has the, in English it's called the Parenthesis of Time, I think.
Yeah, or Forgetfulness.
Like, yeah, or Forgetfulness. Yeah, and like because, yeah, but I believe like he has two of them, and I don't remember the names now, but it's like sort of like time misdirection, to call it like that, where it's in your favor, and one where it's in your disadvantage, right?
Yeah.
Because you have the one where it's like, okay, I'm stealing something and now it's good because I already have the cards in palm and we're talking and doing stuff and there's still something happening in your hands. And then once that card turns over, now I produce the card from the box with the other hand. And
yeah.
Because the deck is a way that created so much distance and time that like nothing could have happened. Because they think in snippets and like we're already four snippets further than when you palm the card. But also like Ascanio says, like, yeah, if you do a double lift, you show the card, you put it on the table, and then go into a whole history of playing cards. And yeah, then show the card has changed. Like, everyone forgot what the card was. But, so that's when it works against you. And whereas with the beginning, of course, when you steal something, it works in your favor, because the longer you are away from the place where you stole it from, with the distance, but also with the time, it works in your favor, sort of, right?
Yeah.
But I wonder, because in your suit apparition, like, what I like that you do is, like, there's that moment of surprise. I think when the other three aces they changed to, that was, like, 10 jack queen.
Mm-hmm.
When I would think about that purely theoretical, I would think of it in the sense of they would forget what they are.
Okay.
But in practice, that's not what happens.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, the idea is not mine. It's from a friend of mine called Joaquin Matas.
Ah, Joaquin Matas, yeah, okay.
An amazing, great magician from Barcelona.
I read his lecture notes recently, like the ones he had translated to English.
Wow, he's super good.
Amazing.
He's incredible. He's incredible. Anyway, so before we move on into this question, I think we need some context about Ascanio and theory, because people might not know these things. The first thing we need to know is magic and effect is the difference between an initial situation and a final situation, right? The more contrast in between these two situations, the bigger the effect, right? If I make a ball very small vanish, the contrast is as small as the ball. But if the ball is massive, bigger contrast, bigger effect, right?
Like a bowling ball, yeah.
Exactly. So contrast can be visual, it can be conceptual, it can be many different things. But anything that works towards that contrast is good. Mm. Anything that works the other way around, it's bad. Right? So contrast, for example, I do a double lift and I show the four of diamonds and I'm here and I give some time to separate the deck, do a magical gesture, boom, and I transform into the eight, right? I need that time to separate the technique from its consequence, because people think technique consequence, you know?
Yeah, they think of causality.
Exactly. So time misdirection, in English it's called, in Spanish there's so many things that involve time misdirection. But one example would be the parenthesis of forgetfulness, right? You leave a small gap of time so they forget where you're coming from, right? So when they backtrack it, they can't remember where it started, right? But if that it's long, then people will start forgetting the initial situation.
Yes.
And if they forget the initial situation, the contrast is going to be less powerful. So a parenthesis of forgetfulness can become an anti-contrasting parenthesis if it's long, you know? And sometimes by long or short, the difference, it's the trick. Some tricks need a bigger parenthesis. Some tricks need a shorter parenthesis. And now we're going into the question you said, right? Oh, they forgot that the aces were on the box. How is that possible that they change into the Jack, Queen, and King, right? Have you ever seen a play in which an actor does something with an invisible object?
Yeah.
That invisible object, once you place it on stage, it's always there.
Yeah.
You created something, right? So if you use part of the stage for only one thing, and it's always been that one thing, that's super memorable. And I'm making sure, what are these cards, the aces, I'm going to put them on top of them. What do you say? I kind of forget the word, the box. Oh, thank you for being here. Yeah, exactly. This is the box. I'm just going to put, keep an eye on them, right? So the only thing that's been there in that space and time for the whole show, it's been the aces, right? And then when the seven appears in between the aces, it reinforces the identity of the aces, right? But also, I want to point out that there's also a mental fixation on things, okay? So you know this trick about the Jacob Daly's aces, right? The red ace on the table, the other red ace on the table, and they change.
The last trick, yeah.
They change into the other aces, right? I'm going to try and explain it verbally for the people that don't see it, but I'm going to try and do it here also for the video, so it makes sense for everyone listening and seeing this, because this most people don't realize it. I think it's so powerful, so powerful. Okay, I've got the black kings and the red kings. Which ones do you prefer? I prefer, I don't know, the red ones. From the red ones, you want the heart or diamonds? Hearts. Okay. Have you ever played Three Card Monty? You know what this is? So on and so forth. I'm going to move this. Okay, you might see things I don't want you to see, but that's fine. Okay, I'm just going to go like this. Okay. So you can see. Okie doke. So I'm going to try and switch the King of Diamonds for the King of Hearts, right? But you try and focus on both, you might end up missing it. So my suggestion would be like, keep an eye on the King of Hearts, okay? I'm going to try and switch it with the King of Diamonds. At first, it's going to be easy, and then it'll get a bit more complicated, okay? So if I do this, ha! Hearts on top or diamonds on top? I'd be like, obviously on top, right? Or what if I do this? Still on top. And they're like, okay, but what if I do this? They change, right? Like, no, it's still on top. No, they change because here I got the black ones, the red ones are in my hand. So all this game of being dumb and I'm switching the card and being, for them it's like, are you stupid? What's happening to you? Like,
yes.
What's this game about? But what all these things do is reinforcing the identity of that card. So you may think, oh, there's a long time until they last saw, but from like since they last saw that was the Red King, right? How come they remember there was the impact is super good? Well, because the mental fixation is super strong, super strong. So there are many ways of bringing the initial situation forward.
Yeah, because now it's with a mental image.
Exactly.
Which no, in some way is stronger, I guess, because they're telling themselves.
Yeah, they're so convinced. Yeah. They're so convinced. When they change, wow. And it's super important to reveal that and then the go back. Not the go back and then, because the contrast is in the table or the cards they've seen before. That's another thing. But yeah, so in that moment, they got a mental fixation of the aces because it's always been there in that place. The seven travel into the aces. So, and I was like, are you mainly paying attention to the aces? And they say, yes. And I say, I'm afraid not. Because now in between the aces, there's a card. Have a look at it and show it to everyone. Oh, when the aces appear on the table, I use the same phrase. Look, have you been paying attention to the aces? I say, obviously not. I'm like, I'm glad you're honest. Because here we got the jack, the queen, the king. Right? It's the same phrase leading to the same moment. Mental fixation. The isolation of the element in that space. All those things add up to the memory of the aces being there.
Yeah. Okay.
That's I don't know if this answers your question.
Yeah. Because usually when you're looking at the, I'm also having other thoughts, but like, let me just put this out first. So, usually when you do that, like when we're talking about, we're just thinking about the physical thing that's happening, right? So we're just thinking about, okay, so the object is seen to be this and it's put down and then it's seen to be different. But obviously it's also where we're thinking in mental images. So as long as they can tell themselves, oh, it's there in the hand. And as long as they truly believe that and they don't have to look for it, I think it's there now, it has to be, it is there.
Yeah,
but when it changes, it's fucking powerful, and especially if they're holding on to it, or like you say, you're isolating something at a place on the table or on the mat, and you're saying this thing is just dedicated for this for this object, then it's fucking powerful. Like it makes me think a bit of the thing in which Fernand uses words also as misdirection.
Yeah,
Because you have the copper silver effect, for example, where you would very often it's introduced with, I have a copper coin and a silver coin, I'm going to give you the silver coin. Now look with a copper coin and the spellbound thing, and then it changes. But like an example of like a Fernian way of thinking would be that you would have them both in your pocket and you take out the silver coin and you go like, okay, look, so the silver coin here, hold on to that. Now, is there any way that I can steal that coin from you? And they go like, no. And they start to squeeze even a bit tighter because they don't want you to steal the coin. But they say there's no way you can steal the coin, in which to themselves are saying there's no way you can steal the silver coin because that's the only coin that's in play.
Exactly.
And then you take out the copper coin. You go, you know what? I'm not just going to steal it. I'm going to do something more difficult. With this copper coin, I'm going to replace the copper coin in your hand to take the silver coin out, and you won't feel a thing. And then once it happens, like,
That's
that's,
genius.
yes.
That's genius because, as you said, you bring both at the same time. You got two elements already. You only win bring one. That's the only information they need to remember. Super simple, super straightforward,
Exactly.
and very memorable. Wow, that's yeah. Also, I like Vernon because he used to say, "Look, I'm not gonna cut. I'm not gonna shuffle the deck. I'm just gonna deal." And he just, while saying those things, he's just doing shuffling and cutting, you know. I like that as well. But what you just said is it's super important as well. Yeah. Dosification of the information. And
Yeah.
also you brought out something super important that Gabby made us all aware of it. It was like, as Kanye said, well, there's an external life of the trick and there's an internal life of the trick.
Yes.
And Gabby says, oh wait, there's also a mental life of the trick. Because the external life is going to be experienced in so many different ways. You know, it's going to be remembered in so many different ways. And that's the mental state of the trick. And that's far more important than the external life, because the external life creates the mental life. We'll have to work with that one, with the mental one, because that's one we have to be working with.
So that's sort of like their experience of the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. And if we're not aware of the mental life of the trick, we'll be like, oh no, but I cannot change this card because of parenthesis or forgetfulness or anti-contrasting parenthesis. Hey, but yeah, ID is like, is the only one silver coin in the hand? Yeah, well, there's no parenthesis of anti-contrasting, you know?
Yeah, it's like I also wrote about this today, and I was like, this thought came to me today or a few days ago. Like, I'm reading Designing Miracles again by Darwin Ortiz.
Okay.
I'm reading it for the first time now. Like, and with
I'm
the Ortiz
sorry.
books, that's fine. Like, I don't like strong, I don't like strong magic that much. I think Designing Miracles is much better. Still not as great as the Scania books,
Don't want to say that, but yeah.
but it's a different book, but I like it. Like, I don't agree with everything in the book, and I kind of like that also, because if you're just reading a book and you go, I agree with this, I agree with this, I agree, like, then why am I reading it? I know it already.
Yeah.
But if I disagree, I'm gonna think, okay, but why do I disagree, you know? And
Oh,
then
yeah, that's a
maybe the
good
author is
approach.
right, maybe I'm right, who knows?
Or being right or wrong doesn't matter as long as we learn something out of these, you know. It could be something new, something or understanding into a deeper level, something we already know.
But that's also like the difficult part I feel for English speakers is like I have had the great gift with the Escanio books that I have many Spanish friends, and that I can just talk to them and be like, what does he mean with this? Or when I'm reading this, I could interpret it in four different ways, or this makes no sense because he says this, and then here he's like talking against himself. It's
Yeah,
because
that's
I interpret this in a different way than I interpret this. And then I talk with someone in Spanish and they go, no. And the Spanish one says this and this and this, which means that. And I go, oh, that makes sense.
the problem with the Ascanio books, and that didn't work very well for Ascanio, obviously, is that they took one of his most famous recordings of a lecture. They tried to transcribe the lecture and add the concepts into it, right? So it's not a book that has been written, you know, for people to understand all the concepts. And because before anything, you need to know what a contrast is. You know what the definition of an effect is. But the book doesn't start with that, and you need it. Because if not, parenthesis of forgetfulness and anti-contrasting parenthesis don't make sense. The
It's
in-transit actions theory doesn't make sense. So.
actually the anti-contrasting parenthesis. Like, it took me 5 times reading that book in order to get what the difference is between like the parenthesis of forgetfulness and the anti-contrasting parenthesis. And it's only now that I'm talking to you that I realize, oh, it's anti-contrasting because the contrast is the effect, and
exactly
this, and this is against the contrast.
Exactly. And the book was, it was written very well, but the structure of the book, I don't think it helps the reader understand.
How was the Gabby version of that book though? Because Gabby's like an annotated version, right?
Well, Gabby had
more
a
like
book.
Expanding yeah. on the theories.
He just explained some concept that from his point of view were a little bit different. I just wanted to add some more information. Mm. And then it's got versions of Ascanio's books. And I read Ascanio. I didn't understand much, to be honest. Mm. Then I hung out with friends that were students from Ascanio.
Mm.
And I learned a lot from them. And then I understood a bit more Ascanio. Then I could reread Ascanio and learn. Mm. But when I read that book about from Gabby from Ascanio, it was like, oh, wow. It's all the things that I didn't really see or fit. Now makes sense. And then yeah, that book from Gabby is incredible. Also, from all the people that read Ascanio, don't just commit to the first volume, okay? Because that's the only the theory book. He's got another two books about his classics and his favorites. Then he's got the one about knives, but and the one with the talks about his classics and his favorites, he's got the two books about car magic. You really see all that theory develop, and that's what you really understand. Because the other one's just like all the concepts like thrown at you. Like, okay, help yourself. You know? And then with the Gabby thing, it goes further a little bit, and it makes you, it points out the key point, and it's Gabby was, oh my God. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to when that book gets translated to English, man.
Well, it's on the making. It's on the making. And it'll be out hopefully some point.
I
can't say deadlines or anything because I don't know, but
no, but looking forward to that. Like, it's gonna be amazing, hopefully.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it'll be amazing.
The thing I was thinking about earlier, like, which was where my whole preface went, and then we went off on a tantrum about books, is I was thinking also, like, very often, especially I feel in English, when we're talking about the time misdirection or parentheses of forgetfulness, we're just talking about the internal life in some sense from the magician's point of view. So we're talking about being a step ahead. And in that sense of like, okay, if I have like A, B, C, right, people think causality. So they think, okay, when B happens, it happens because of A. And then when C happens, it happens because of B. So ideally you would do something that causes C in A, so that when they have the B and then the C happens, they cannot connect it because that makes no sense.
Yeah. Or you do two techniques and then it just develops three effects. So,
yes,
yeah,
exactly. But still, I feel like very often when this was to explain to me in English, like it was very much focusing on the structure and the techniques that we do as a magician. So from our point of view, we should structure it in this sense where we're doing this thing at A, then this different technique in B. So then that when we reach C, it's stronger. And that's true. But I do feel
you
also
can all apply. Yeah, sorry.
We also have to look at the spectator's point of view, right? So that B doesn't necessarily have to be an other technique or magical moment happening. It can also just be us creating a different moment for them. Like, for example, you know the Brute Force Opener by Dennis Baer?
Not really, no. It's, okay, I might know it because...
Simply explain, it's like they pick a card, right? You could throw it to the top, like by a side steal or something. Mm-hmm. You show them the top card. This is not your card. Okay, great. Open up your hand. You put that card in their hand. Change it. Change to the card, you do a top change so it goes back, and then you produce it from the box that's on the table. You go like,
okay,
it was in the box. So what I started to do now is I go like, I do a top change, give it to them, and I wave over it with my hands, and I go like, okay, so you might feel something strange. Like, this card is like just an illusion, but this card starts to change slowly to look like a different card. Okay, take a look, and then they look, and it's their card. And then when they're freaking out, do the top change, give it back to them, and I go, and then already I palm the cards, like I palm the top.
Yeah.
And I wave over with my hand with the same motion. But
with the palm card.
With the palm card. And I go, but it's just an illusion, because if we just break the spell, it goes back to how it once looked. And they look and it's gone. And then all the time I have that card in palm while nothing is really happening. And then I go, well, but to me, this makes a lot of sense because you heard me say it's an illusion, right? They go, yeah, but maybe to you that makes no sense because I know more than you do. Like, you see that box that has been there on the table since the beginning of everything? They go, yeah. Well, look, with that box, there's one card. And then you produce that card from the box.
Yeah.
And that's when they freak out, you know? Because then that makes it impossible. But necessarily in that example, it's not so much that there's a lot happening in between the moment where I do the palm and produce it from the box.
Yeah.
There's just a big amount of time in their experience in between it.
100%. Yeah.
So I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, it completely makes sense. Yeah, you're working when you have time, and when you don't have time, you just have to do anything, you know? Just that's super clever. Also, when you were talking, that brought me a point into my attention that theory before Ascanio, and obviously I know I'm talking from my point of view, but what are the things that I
Of
know?
course.
It was like a recipe. You know, you do this and this and this, it worked this way. And with Ascanio, it's not so much a recipe, but a map. You know, you go into the trick and you got this map. Like, okay, you can go towards this, because Ascanio is concepts that talk to each other. And it's a balance and it's equilibrium, it's contrast, but it has to be also economical. But if it's economical, you know, it's not going to be clear because you're missing things. And it's always a struggle, always a battle, you know, with Ascanio's theory. You know where you stand and you know where you want to go. And it gives you different roads you have to walk. It doesn't tell you do this and it's going to work. It tells you, well, these things are like this. Use them as you wish and then you'll see where you go.
That's it.
Right? So it's easier to use theory as a roadmap, as a route,
It's more
than
like
just as
a
a
system,
recipe.
right? It's more like a, it feels more like a, it's a system of working on things rather than, oh yeah, just sprinkle the saffron on
Yeah.
the thing.
It's a whole conception, is understanding magic in a way, you know? And I think that's why Ascanio was misunderstood for the English community or English speaking, non-Spanish people. That's why Ascanio might be so important for us and not so important for everyone else, because we understand that as a guidance more than just as a recipe, as a way of understanding and seeing magic more than just a way of applying theory.
Okay, give me 2 seconds. We're gonna go to the toilets real quick, and I'll be right back.
Oh my God. Okay, don't stop recording. Don't stop recording now, you're peeing. Okay, I want to
No.
know people to know this.
Oh, you want to hear the sound? Okay, let me just get the mic with me. Okay.
Oh yeah, please do. Super happy to be hearing that.
No, see you in a bit.
Bit of it. Okay, well, Rico is out. I don't know if he's gonna hear this part of the conversation, but he's a very good magician and he takes care of things. He takes care of magic, and that's why he's onto all these projects, you know, the podcast and the magazines and spreading magic. And I don't know why he invited me to do this, but the fact that he did, it made me very happy. I just hope that this makes sense and helps anybody out there. But follow this man and make sure that he's happy too, because he's doing a lot for magic and people don't realize it. Okay. Hopefully it doesn't cut. It just doesn't hear or anything, it just like leaves it. That'll be amazing. Oh my God. Oh, this is very interesting. Oh look, here he is back.
And we are back. There we go. Now, but I think, why do you think that is, though? That like the English speaking community hasn't gotten so much of the idea that it's a roadmap?
Because Spaniards have learned about Ascanio, about his series, and about everything from people that studied with them, from people that with them, and also and understood and studied and worked and practiced all these things. People outside of Spain didn't get that chance. So the only thing they have, it's either another Spaniard that tells them or the books. And most of the times the books, they don't do it justice at all. At all. So that's why. They read the books and they like, oh well, okay. And then when they talk about Scania, they remember that they read the books and they didn't make much sense. And like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, for me also the book is a bit weirdly structured, isn't it? It starts with all the theoretical lectures, and then you have like interviews for like 100 pages or something. And then it goes back to the lecture to like concepts of articles.
As I said, it's not written to be able to help out the reader, and that's the pity. But it is
Do
what it is, and
you
I'm
think it
glad
could
that
be like restructured and it would be better understandable?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe when all the Gabby books come out and everyone reads Gabby, it'll be like, oh, but I need to understand Ascanio to be able to understand Gabby.
Got me. Yeah.
Maybe that will push people to reread and understand, or maybe hopefully we can do a second edition or a third edition or whatever edition it is to do. But that can only happen if people really want it to be done, or if all the other books that are already published about Ascanio are sold out. And I don't know how it's gonna go, but hopefully Gabby going out there with his books will bring more importance to Ascanio, because the more we know Ascanio, the more we know about Gabby. So the more we understand Ascanio, the more appreciation we can show to Gabby as well, you know.
Yeah. Like, I think the first time I realized that fully about the system is when I saw those videos from what's his name, like Rodriguez.
Ricardo?
Yeah.
That's him. It's he's a guy. He's a super
He's
clever
gone.
guy, super passionate. And he's got some points, and I do agree with most of them. Yeah.
I think those videos are great. Like, I mean, of course, you still have to think for yourself, but like, he raises some really good points. Some good intellectual points, also. I like it.
And he goes into the philosophy part, and it's not easy. It's not easy to see his videos and understand what he means all the time, but
No, I think
he's opening new doors.
I'll go back tonight and rewatch
Okay, good. Don't think about me though.
some of them. Hey, but that's also like it's a very different way of looking at magic because the English speaking community with a lot of magic, like you said, it's not so much of a road, it's not so much of a map, like a system. It's more like, oh, I can use this one technique here in this moment to enhance this point.
Yeah, it's more isolated, it's more ABC. I think it's easier to apply, but harder to apply all the time.
It's more of like a, oh, right now they see the top change in this moment. What do I do? Oh, maybe I can use this technique, you know, rather than magic is like this. Because that's the one thing from Ascanio that I still remember. It's like, I think from all the theory books I read so far, he's one of the few that goes like, yeah, but what is the magical effect? In some way, and then you go, okay, well, we have the initial and the final situation, and the contrast between that is the magic.
Exactly. And that's the most important thing, the contrast. That's the key, you know? And everything has to be put out towards the power of the effect, and that relies heavily on the contrast.
But how does that contrast exist within mentalism, though?
Well, by the fact that it exists, it is already a contrast, you know? Think of a word. Kerfuffle. Oh yeah, it is. How do you know? Well, and the more complicated the process is, or the more things you put in, it depends on the effect as well. We could be talking about hours there, but you can always analyze why they think is it's more powerful or less powerful. And
Yeah,
most of the times you might be
just try
thinking
I'm
that
just
in
trying to
defense.
understand why it's a contrast.
Why there's a contrast? Because the fact that that can be done, it's already impossible. So from possible to impossible. But not because magic is also impossible, but they think, okay, there's a trick. There's a trick and blah blah blah. And they're like, okay, this can be done. But mentalism sometimes it's treated as real, as no technique, but just purely mind to mind.
But now, would that contrast be purely magical in some, like, sorry, mental in some way? So they're thinking, okay, now he doesn't know what I'm thinking of, and I'm thinking of it, and he's reading my mind or reading my psychological tells, and now he knows.
And that on itself, it goes against all the belief system of reality. Because when you take a deck out, you're like, okay, I don't know what he did, but he did something. But the difference between guessing a card or guessing a word, it could be a force and then a pick. You know, I just force a card and then I just pick the information. But if I don't have the cards, the approach that the audience has towards that moment is so much different. You know?
Yeah.
And that's something we should really, really understand as well. Because magic with cards, it should be treated differently from mentalism. Because it's not the same doing mentalism with cards than doing mentalism without cards.
That's true, yeah.
The approach should be different because they see it differently. We have to work from there. And then we can teach them, you know? It's our duty to teach our audiences about our craft and about our art. Because we are the ones who know about it. They don't know shit.
That's it, yeah.
So it's our duty to teach them, you know? But first we have to understand, okay, what do you know? What do you think? This? Okay, let's go from there. You know, I cannot start saying, no, but mentalism and card magic is the same shit, you know, because I do a peak or a force and then just, I don't know why it's so powerful. It's like, for them, it's not the same thing.
No, the whole experience, everything is different.
Most of the time they say, oh, no, but do you do illusions? Or do you do, or do you read minds? Because this is magic, but do you read minds? And for them, it's another thing. Another completely different thing.
And that's, again, also talking about the inner and the outer reality, right?
100%. 100%. Yeah.
Because for us, yeah, sure, we're using the same techniques, the same type of psychology and deception, and most theory is pretty sound across all boards.
Yeah. Because for us, it's the same world, with the same techniques, different presentation. But for them, it's a different discipline. It's like we're playing, I don't know, chess, and then, I don't know, we backgammon. You know, like a different world, a different sport. And this might be good, bad, I don't know. It's not for me to judge it, but we should know.
Do you think that's also because people don't tend to mix a lot?
I don't know. I think it's because we're so focused as a society on the physical stuff. I have ideas, I see. We're so based on the physical parts. But we go now into a different area, which is the mental state or the mental part. We're so not used to it. We see it so far. But maybe we're back in time for a shaman to know what you're thinking. Maybe it was easier than to change water into ice. Maybe that was more powerful, you know, because manipulating physic objects, it was maybe harder for them back in those days because they were more connected to the spiritual part of life. You know, I don't know. It has to be something about culturally what we're more connected to, and that's why magic changes. You know, because we're more focused on the physical part of life, and back in those days, they were more worried about the spiritual life. So maybe mentalism back in those days was easier than changing a car for another one. You know? I don't know. I'm just hypothesizing, you know?
Yeah, but I guess it's also not necessarily about what is easier in reality, but also about what would feel easier to those people.
You know, yeah, thank you for reframing that. Yeah,
of
exactly.
Of course, we have the priest. He talks to God. So there must also be someone that knows, that can do this.
What I think.
Yeah,
why not? Because God knows what I think. And if this guy talks to God, he knows everything. I know I've been cheating on my girlfriend for the past 7 years. I don't know. But how the hell did he change that card or that flower into, I don't know, it could be anything. But yeah, that might be the case. I don't know.
I think it's interesting to think about, though. But do you think then, like, also now, I mean, of course, we have, like, a lot of social media going on, and then there's a lot of visual magic going on that just works for social media, and people, their attention span is getting shorter and shorter.
Oh well, that's a different, oh my god, that's a yeah, a whole new different thing. Attention span, that's very difficult. Yeah, I used to be able to see, I don't know, 7 seconds, 8 seconds. Now it's going down to 4 seconds of attention span. Oh my god, it's just going, it's surreal. And that also, we need to be aware of it.
Yeah, because does that affect you in any way, like when you're performing in the clubs?
Yeah. Especially younger generations.
Mm.
Because all the things that they see through social media, videos or TikToks and all these things. It's full of dopamine hits. Like dopamine shots, like boom, oh yes, and this, and boom, and that's this, and
yeah,
flash,
so
and
much shit
and light. And it's always like, it's like boom, dopamine. So like, so when they're in a situation, they don't get all that stimulation, like on board already. You know, so it's not, the brain just disconnects. It's not, when we're talking about attention span, I'm not neuroscience. I don't know anything about science. I've read a lot, but I'm still fucking, I don't know anything. You know, I don't know anything about magic either, but I know more about magic than about science.
But you read a lot.
But the thing is, the brain needs to be efficient, energy terms, energy wise, right? It is interesting that this requires my attention, yes or no. That's it. So my attention goes quicker because I decide quicker if this is worth my energy or not. You know, and if the brain doesn't get all the a stimulation out of dopamine, all those hormones, it's just like boom, put the brain into this drive state. The brain's like, I don't like this. Why? Because it doesn't give me anything that I like. It doesn't give me the stimulation. It doesn't so on and so forth. So that's why. And before, we needed more time to see if it was worth or not. But now with all the stimulation in a second, we can know in a second that we're going to pay attention to this or not.
But then that might not necessarily be the good thing. It might just be the thing that gives you a lot of dopamine.
Yeah.
That makes you excited about something.
But as I said, and we go back to the beginning of the talk, if you earn the right of them paying attention to you, that's it. You don't need the attention span is going to be there. They're going to pay attention because you've earned the right. You know, and that comes from the persona. So if you come to a table and you do a flash trick and boom, and then another one, another visual, and then blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's going to be interesting for them. That's going to be stimulating. But when that goes away, you're done. But when you create a connection to the audience, you make sure that this is valuable and they understand that this is valuable and they decide to pay attention. Oh, that's it. You cross that massive barrier already without doing any magic. And then you're not working against that. They're working with you.
Yeah, now you are becoming their friend that does magic.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more of a sharing. Yeah, because we connected to another human being, and that people is not used to this nowadays. They're connected to human beings through all these. So that you're connected to computers that are connected to people.
I mean, that's why I like find it more difficult to connect to other people.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's why I still fall in love with magic every day. Yeah, because I just take two cards as one. And I just take the top card, the card changes. And then these people just feel something. I create a connection and then we can talk about anything. And I've got friends that follow me on Instagram that we chat every now and then. And they met me in a gig 7 years ago. COVID happened. I don't know. They made a question like, oh, are you going to Spain anytime soon? Yeah, I'll be going in 2 months. Okay, hit me up. Shoot me a message if you need anything. Because I'm Spanish. I've been around. Maybe you're in Madrid. I know people. Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. No, thank you. You've been very nice. Magic gave me that in a way, you know, because I created a moment, they valued it, and then we create a connection, they become a relationship. And that's why I still fall in love with it every day, because when we die, oh my God, this is getting super deep. All of a sudden, but when we die, what do we want to be put on our gravestone? I'm not going to put that I've been performing in Vegas, in the Magic Castle, I've been lecturing around the world. No. What I want my gravestone to say is what I did for others. Loving father, caring friend. What lives on is what you did for others. And I think that with magic, I can help people. And I'm not saying I'm going to change their life. I'm going to change their belief system, and then they're going to go into Bitcoin and be fucking rich in 2 days. I'm not saying all those things, but I can change their life ever so slightly. Maybe they know a different thing. They learn something. They experience something they've experienced before. But the fact that I get the chance of doing this every day with so many people in a very nice way. Fucking hell.
Yeah, you can create a lasting memory for someone.
Yeah, 100%. And then, I don't know, so many things can happen. One day I was performing in a theater and I was doing 10 shows a week. 10 shows a week. I felt like going to the factory and just like, Victor in, Victor out. And that is terrible.
Yeah, because I feel
for
you.
Me, it was another show, but for them was the show.
Mm.
They spent the whole year earning money to be able to go on vacation and pay for that show. And for me, just like, yeah, day, done, bye. You know, and I noticed this because there was a man that came to me at the end of the show and said, hey, thank you very much. I love the show. I said, oh, no, thank you. I appreciate it. And he said, no. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. And then I just realized I'm missing something. Like, okay, but why are you making sure that I understand? And he said, well, it's been so long since my daughter forgot that she's got cancer. And I'm not saying this because, oh, you're so good with magic that you forgot. No, man, forget that part. But the fact that girl, and I looked at her, she was like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, that for 2 hours, she fully lived his life in the present without thinking about the future, while thinking she was about to die, fully enjoying the moment. Magic is trivial. I don't give a shit if I take 2 cards and they got me to get. Yeah, I took 2 cards. What is that? Is that no? That's not important. No, but that moment for that girl, and especially for the father, he would have paid $1,000 or 1,000 euros or whatever it is for that girl to be able to forget that moment. You know, because all her life is just based on that thing. You know, so. We never know. We never know what's going to happen when we do magic. And approaching it as a special thing, as a gift for them, as you're doing it for them, it would change my life. And it's been changing life for other people around me. Not dramatically, I'm not saying that now, as I said, but, you know. But if you do it, if their life is this 0.0001% better than it was before you arrived.
But even their day, maybe, you know, like...
Yeah, you made the day or the dinner. It's,
like, I mean, it's very powerful, because also what you say is like, you know, you have those moments when you have sort of like an okay day, and then this one thing happened and it just fucks up the rest of your day, like mentally. Like, I had this recently, like, I had kind of an okay day and I went grocery shopping, and I noticed everything was more expensive and I got a bit annoyed by that. And then as I left the store, I bought X. Like, both the bags I bought, they just ripped and like whoop, everything over the floor. And I was like, and that fucked up my day so much. And then even then, I'm just mentally trying to get out of that, to be like, oh yeah, no, but it's just like one moment that happened and it was going so well before that. But still, it takes like a few hours to get out of that mental space.
Yeah,
but that can also happen the other way around with magic. It's like you do, someone might be having a bad day or an okay day, and they just see like 10 minutes or an hour of a magic show, and that can be such a powerful experience that they just go, oh, you know, they completely forget about everything, and now they're energized and they have a whole different way of looking.
It's and like the mindset changes, and then they see reality in a different way.
It's like a reset button.
It happens to me, you know. Sometimes I have a shitty day, and my girlfriend, sometimes says, okay, go and perform a trick for somebody. Because she sees how I feel when people feel magic, you know, and she sees that my mental state and my energy changes when I perform. And when I'm having a bad day and I don't know what to do, like, just go out, go to the coffee shop, order a coffee, play with your card. Someone's going to notice you, do a magic trick for them, and you're going to be seeing the day in a different way. And that happens to me, and that's why I fall in love with magic every day, and that's why I think you can But yeah, mindset, it just shapes your reality, you know?
But that's also in some way, like I was recently reading this book from Benjamin Orwell. It's called Real Magic. It's a very small booklet. Like the adjustments like this. Like it's like a few pages. It's like something free I once got from finishing Ink Without Order. But it's pretty profound because like his argument is that magic is real.
It
And
is.
it is, because I think very often when we say that, we're thinking of, oh yeah, magic is real. We think someone says, oh yeah, the supernatural is real. But that's not necessarily what they mean, you know, like the emotion and the feeling of magic, that's real. But to some way, the way that you relate to the world is what you have experienced and seen that can happen. Like what you see with your eyes and can happen. I mean, as long as you have all your senses, that's how you relate to the world, and that's how you know what happens. So then if someone uses like psychology and psychological subtleties together with sleight of hand and some other things to make it actually to make you see something that you know is impossible and to just make you see certain things, I mean, that's magic, you know.
The fact that we can experience these things on its own.
Because you
Well,
don't
you
see what's
know.
behind it, you just see all the things that's happening and just seeing those things, I mean.
Well, from starters, we're in a massive rock floating in the universe. Okay, wake up. This is
Yeah,
incredible on itself.
there's a fireball above our heads.
There's a fireball. It's insane, you know? But that reminded me of a quote from Jorge Luis Borges. It's a South American writer, it's a genius. And he said, well, I'll try to translate it as accurately as I can. With the use of the lie, you can explain many truths. And from all the lies, art is the least of a liar, you know, because you know art is a lie on itself and you know it's a lie. But with that lie, you can express so many things, you can explain so much. And when you go into a movie, do you know that actor is being paid millions to fucking die? But you're crying anyways. Why are you crying if it's fake? Who cares if it's fake? What I'm experiencing is what matters. I'm going to see a movie because I want to experience things. I'm going to the amusement park because I want to experience things. Who cares if it's fake or real? What I'm experiencing, what I'm feeling, it's so real. And that's what truly matters. So magic, it is real because I'm using a lie to make you feel stuff.
Exactly.
So it is real, 100%. Every day. All day.
That's it. Every day, all day. Magic is real. I think that's also a good way to end the podcast.
Oh, having so much fun.
Me too, man. You should come back in the future.
I'm happy. Yeah, I'm super happy that you brought me here, that we talked about stuff. I just hope that anything that I said or you discussed resonated with anybody.
I hope
But
so
if it
too, but
didn't,
honestly, I don't care.
we had a great time anyways, right?
Yeah, you know, like also, like I told you, like this is just an excuse for me to talk with interesting people, but also
Thank you.
to talk with people I care about in like a different setting, you know? Because if I talk to you one on one, we can still have the same conversation, but we both have the feeling like we're less important, like we have to say less smart shit.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe because we're doing quote unquote a podcast, we take it a bit more seriously, you know?
Yeah, there's gonna be a lot less fart jokes in between you.
Oh, definitely less. Oh, God. Well, thank you
was
very much, Rika, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
thanks for being here, man.
And guys, anybody listening to this, follow Rico. He's doing a lot for magic with the magazine, with the videos, with the help him out because he's helping magic a lot and is worth checking out as well. Okay, just do it.
Thank you, man. So
No,
appreciate
truly mean it.
it.
Truly mean
Thank you.
it.
Thank you.
Whatever I say, whatever comes from my mouth, if I don't say it's a joke, I mean it. Well, I mean jokes as well, but as jokes, you know, but anyway.
This is jokes, exactly. Okay, thank you so much for being here, and I'll just stop recording then.
I'll see you shortly.
Let's see.